Hello and welcome to all of our two and four-legged listeners. It's Nathan here from Right Paw, and welcome to What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast. We're back for our final episode of 2022. Can't believe we've had another year of the pod. It's our second year in production, and we wouldn't be here, of course, without everyone's favorite geneticist, George. George, welcome back to the pod.
Nathan, is this really the last one?
For the year.
For the year.
Not ever. Surely not ever.
No, not the way things have been going. No way. And have we been going since 2021?
We have. We have. So this is the end of the second season of the pod. Who would have thought?
Who would have? Exactly.
Two journeyman podcasters.
You know, exactly. The first one we started, they thought they're not going to last more than two. And look at it. And we're finishing the year one with one that sort of, you know, a bit of anticipation. I've got a bit of muscle tension happening, a bit of avoidance behavior, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah, okay, it's a good segue into the topic for today. And look, it's for our last episode of the year, we thought, look, we have to raise the bar a little bit. So we're like, we have to bring a podcaster on as well. So another guest who actually has her own podcast, which is fantastic. And we'll do a bit of a plug for that a little bit later as well, the Cavoodle Coach. But we're really excited to have her here to talk about that, you know, behavior, separation anxiety, and a whole lot more. But welcome, Tiana, River City Puppies, Cavoodles. Welcome to the pod.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here. How are you today?
We're well, great. Tiana. Tiana, you're very scary because you look very profesh.
Oh, you're out
doing Nathan and myself.
Oh, I've just been feeding puppies. I don't look professional at all.
Look, maybe for the listeners, it's the gear that you've got, the headphone, the microphone, the pop filter.
Yeah, it looks more fancier than what I am.
No, it's great. Yeah, it's all about the gear, and look, it's awesome to have you. I mean, you've not only been breeding for a little while, but you've also been, you know, doing your podcast as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, the breeding I've been doing longer than the podcast. The breeding's been about 3 years almost, but the podcast is quite recent, only the past few months, and I've been helping Cavoodle owners navigate raising their puppies by answering their most common questions and in short bite-sized episodes. So it's been going really well so far. I enjoy it a lot, and I've been getting great feedback, so it's going great.
And the podcast is called?
The Cavoodle Coach podcast. Kept it really simple.
The CC podcast. What made you decide to do podcasts? What was your thinking behind it?
Well, I already do coaching with Cavoodle parents, helping them navigate raising their puppies. And I just thought it would be a really good way to reach more people by having a podcast, because typically I just go onto Instagram stories and And I would talk about all these topics on there, but as you know, they disappear after 24 hours. So I was like, all right, let's pop it on a podcast. That way people can refer back to it whenever they want. And yeah, it's been great. A big learning experience.
It is. And the younger generation these days, Tiana, love a podcast.
They do, yes. I love a podcast. I listen to them all the time.
And, you know, hence why Nathan motivated me into getting behind and doing these podcasts. If it wasn't for him, I'd probably still be typing and, you know.
Yeah.
Good. And the world will be deprived of all your wit and knowledge.
God, yes. I look keeper. Yes, I know. And you're on Spotify as well. And how can we get a hold of your podcast?
Yeah, Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts. If you just search up Cavoodle Coach, I'm the only Cavoodle podcast out there, so you'll find me. Just search up Cavoodle or Cavapoo if you're in America, if you have any American listeners.
Can I have that again? You're the only Cavoodle podcast out there.
Yeah, I'm the only Cavoodle podcast and the only Cavoodle coach. So training specifically Cavoodles. So it's exciting because obviously it's such a popular breed.
Totally. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
The most popular that we get.
Exactly. Same here. I'm surrounded by Cavoodles. So I thought that's my passion lies with them. So I'd wanted to specifically study Cavoodles and their behavior and just help that way. And yeah, it's the only podcast, which is makes it easy to find me, which is nice.
Cool. And would I be right, Nathan, in saying it's the most popular breed on the Right Paw portal?
You'd be safe to say that. I think it's not only the most popular breed in Australia, but definitely the most popular breed on the Right Paw platform as well. I think, you know, people have fallen in love with that particular, you know, developmental breed as well. And also, Tiana, like, maybe what attracted you to the breed? You know, what was your breeding journey?
Well,
the money.
Definitely not the money. I actually, when I was 6 years old, I wanted to breed cavoodles and got told I was too young. But I got my first cavoodle when I was very young, and they were not well known. So I've had him for 14 years now. He's still around. His name's Oscar. And I fell in love with the breed, and everyone we introduced him to, they fell in love with him because they're just so well suited to families in general. Anyone who's working from home, working out of home, in apartments, in houses, wherever you are, they suit that family. And I just think they're the most beautiful breed. And so I wanted to breed them because I have them in my house. They're my family pet. And it made sense to breed something that I love so much. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. They are temperament-wise, they're a breed that sort of suits across a wide population. They're really nice. They can be a bit difficult to manage, some of them, you know, when that you got a bit more poodle in them, they can be a bit all over the place.
That's where the coaching comes in.
It is where the coaching comes in, yes.
But, you know, whenever you see them at the park, they're always gentle. They always approach other dogs. They're very sort of passive. There's just not one bit of aggression in them. And they can sometimes yap a bit. So all those, yeah, they are. And, you know, every dog is, every breed is, but there's something about a cavoodle that makes them so attractive.
It's just a beautiful cross between the Cavalier, which are so placid and loving and gentle, and the Poodle, who are so intelligent, and obviously the non-shedding coat. It just creates a really wonderful cross between the best temperaments and personality traits, I think, in my opinion, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. No one's doubting, it is the most popular breed in Australia and, you know, only growing in that. And I think there's so many great things about the Cavoodle, and we've had a lot of Cavoodle breeders on the podcast as well that have spoken about just how great the breed is as well. And I think, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have this topic as well is because it is, you know, the more Cavoodles that there are out in the world and in Australia, a lot of owners are starting to notice this trend perhaps of, you know, a particular difficulty with that breed, which is this idea of separation anxiety. And it's a word that's thrown around a lot, and you know, it's maybe a bit misunderstood. So maybe you can help us understand, well, what is separation anxiety?
Well, the way that I like to explain it to people, it's like when you have a toddler, when you leave the room, a puppy can't necessarily understand that you're going to be coming back. And so all these puppies who are bred as companion breeds, like Cavoodles, Poodles, Shoodles, Cavaliers, all these companion dog breeds, they start to get very anxious that they're never going to see you again. So they start to get very stressed and they start to show some abnormal behaviours. Now, these behaviours, they can be something like barking, crying, scratching, chewing furniture, licking their paws, toileting accidents. And the reason why they are doing these is because they are so anxious and stressed. And the way that they can reduce the stress and anxiety is by doing activities that increase adrenaline, like chewing, like barking, like licking. So that's what causes separation anxiety. But obviously, when you're a family, you have to leave the house, you have to go out. And if you have your puppy at home and you feel trapped by them, then they're just not fitting into your lifestyle, and it causes a lot of problems for families. And Cavoodles in particular are very prone to separation anxiety.
So some breeds are more anxious than others, of course.
Yes, I think so. Just because, I mean, it comes down to what the breed is bred for originally. If you were looking at something like a Border Collie or a Kelpie, they're working breed dogs. So they're bred to work. They typically live outside. They're not usually in your house, on your lap, sleeping in your bed. Whereas a Cavoodle is specifically bred literally to sit on your lap and give you cuddles. So they're more prone to separation anxiety than these other working breeds.
It's a good point. Like, I think it's, you know, as you know, breeding has evolved, and as you said, you know, you breed for a particular purpose. If you want a companion dog and you want all the best traits of those dogs, which are, you know, they're going to be with you, they're going to, you know, want to be with you and be affectionate. Obviously, the flip side of that is that when you're not around, they're obviously going to want to be with you, and you know, that's it's sort of just managing that sort of trade-off, I guess, and learning how to build up the dog's resilience.
Exactly. And it can be quite a process. And the issue a lot of Cavoodle owners, or just owners of small breed dogs, run into is they don't start implementing this and instilling confidence and capability within their puppy from day one. Because the day that you bring your puppy home is when they're in their critical socialization period. So that's when they're most influenced by the surrounding environments that they're in. So if you don't have the proper routine in place and the proper boundaries in place, you unintentionally create these habits that lead to separation anxiety. And it's so easy for owners to do this because for the first week or the first 2 weeks, they want to spend it with their puppy glued to their side because they love their puppy. It's so cute. But yeah, it leads to all these problems, especially separation anxiety.
And Tiana, we do it with pets now. We're sort of more indoors. We keep them more comfortable. It's not like it was 20 years ago where a dog did sit outside.
Exactly.
On your bed. Everywhere you go, you want to take your dog. You know, I have separation anxiety from Charlie. I've mentioned it from years ago, from when I first got him. Maybe it was something that I caused, where when I first had him, I wanted to take him everywhere. I never left him on his own. Maybe I should have left him with others in those first few months. So, you know, it's in some ways we've created it for them. We've sort of humanized them more, so they want to be around us more. And you're right, it's dogs pick up senses. I know when my dog sees a suitcase come out, he knows it's a long journey, we're going somewhere, so all of a sudden they start to react funny. We do little things to help them. We leave the radio on if we're going out somewhere, little things like that. I've got another dog to try and help, you know, Charlie, but she's just as bad, you know. She wants to it's probably the number one issue that I hear about and see from dogs is this anxiety thing, because no one really wants to leave them on their own anyway. People don't really like taking them to kennels and pounds to leave them there. You want to go on a holiday. And we used to get annoyed because every holiday we'd look for, we had to try and find it was pet friendly or local.
Which makes it difficult. And it means you can't go traveling overseas on the plane either.
Correct.
You want to pay a lot of money to get the dog over there. So,
you know, and then we'd go somewhere and then I'd be the one sitting outside the op shop with the dogs while they were all in there. And I used to get annoyed because they'd come out with the bargains and I have nothing. So then now I carry the dog in there. Thank God places, Nathan, are becoming more dog friendly so you can take your dogs in there. So all those sort of things are – so I'm keen to listen to some of the tips. Like, look, for example, I've got Charlie sitting right here next to me just in case he misses out on anything.
Yeah.
But that's – I've created this monster.
He's not a monster. He just loves you.
I mean, Tiana, what would you say some of the, like, what are some of the stories that you've heard from some of your owners or, you know, or just people in general? Like, what are some of the challenges that they're facing, you know, that separation anxiety can lead to?
Honestly, I mean, the most severe ones is when the dog is destroying furniture, trying to chew through doors, just because they're so stressed and fearful in these situations. I have a little cavoodle jumping on me right now. They're, you know, companion dogs, they're always on you. But then there's the more mild cases where the puppy just cries and barks. And obviously neighbors get annoyed if a dog is barking all day. And obviously we don't want our puppies to be in distress all day. And we want to be able to leave the house knowing the puppy's okay. Otherwise your time out of the house is ruined because you're worried about your dog. Mm-hmm. So there's a really broad range of mild cases to more severe cases. And honestly, the easiest thing to do is to prevent it, not fix it once it's already there. So for anyone who's getting a puppy, it's the most important thing you need to be doing in terms of training for your cavoodle. It's not teaching them to sit. It's not teaching them to stay and lie down. It's teaching them to be okay on their own and to feel comfortable and capable of being left alone in the house. So hello, Chelsea. She's jumping on my leg.
You know, you're coming back. It's okay.
I know, exactly. And they can't understand that. That's the thing. We can't speak dog, obviously. I'm going to have to put you down, Chelsea. She's trying to get on my lap. You can't speak dog, so we can't tell them we're coming home. But we need to start from day one. They need to be used to us leaving the house or leaving the room, and they need to be used to independent play. Teaching your dog independent play, there's nothing more beneficial for that dog. If they rely on you for play and if they rely on you for comfort and security, you will deal with separation anxiety your entire life.
So going back to that sort of moment of getting your dog, you know, it sounds like as we believe at Riper as well, like the work that you do at the beginning of a dog's life just is the most critical in terms of setting your dog up for success. So what do you recommend to your, you know, your owners or to any owner who's getting a cavoodle or any breed? What are those things you can do to minimize the risk of separation anxiety?
What you need to do is, firstly, I always say a split-second decision, overnight decision to get a dog is never a good idea. you need to do a lot of research and learning about the breed and understanding what the breed needs prior to bringing the puppy home. If you're pregnant, you have 9 months to prepare for a baby. So when you're getting a dog, they're like a baby. They can't do anything for themselves. They're relying on you completely. So you need to do a lot of preparation. And in that preparation, you need to look at your lifestyle, what your routine looks like on a day-to-day basis. And then you need to go, okay, when I bring my puppy home, I need to implement this routine as much as possible.
Correct.
While making sure all the needs of the dog are being met. So if you're working 8 hours a day at an office, it's not necessarily going to work. It's not a great time to get a puppy. But if you work from home, you need to remember, well, the puppy can't sit in the office with me all day. Otherwise, when I try and leave on the weekend, it's going to be scared. So during the day, the puppy needs to spend some time in the kitchen while I'm in the office for a few hours. And then I'll come have a play and do some training. And then I'll leave the puppy again. So you need to just implement a routine where the puppy is having time during their day alone. But you have to make sure when you're leaving your puppy alone, you need to leave them with something to do. If you were to put a toddler in an empty room, they're going to cry. They're going to probably yell and try and get your attention to come and let them out. But if you put a toddler in a room with puzzles and toys and different learning games, they're going to be entertained. They're going to be focused on what they're doing and they're going to have something to do and they're not going to think about the fact that they're alone. So the same thing works with puppies. When you leave your puppy alone, you need to give them something to do. A stuffed teddy is not enough. A stuffed teddy is not going to capture their attention. Caboodles would much rather be in your lap than play with a stuffed teddy. So you need to use treats and enrichment toys to stimulate the mind. And prior to leaving them alone, you need to do training with them so they're tired, so they have used up all this energy. So it's all about setting a routine and understanding exactly what you need to do so that when you leave your puppy alone, they are set up to be the most comfortable that they can and they can get used to it and they can enjoy being alone. And that's the key to separation anxiety. The dog has to enjoy being alone.
Yeah. And it's important, Tiana, to another thing that I find really works. There's a routine, but I also find that taking them for a walk, exercising them is so important. I know when I take my dogs for a morning walk, for a long walk, and they come back, guess what? You can go in there for an hour, 2 hours, they're just lying down.
Exactly.
And I have a routine. Afternoon as well, I find when I take them for a really long walk, they sleep right through. I have a doggy door so they can go in and out so they can do things. It's, you know, one dog loves playing with the ball and I use that as a way of giving them some exercise.
Exactly. So
routine and keep sticking to that routine. If I find that if I don't take my dogs for that long morning walk, they're up and down following me. Where am I going? You know, where have you been? It's 11:30, 12 o'clock. You haven't taken me for that walk. It's that routine.
And that's the thing. You have to make sure you can't expect a dog to be left alone all day and to be okay. You have to make sure that their enrichment levels are being met, their exercise levels are being met, that their brain is being used before you leave them alone. Otherwise, they're going to go stir crazy. If you were left in a room alone all day, you would go stir crazy. And you're not even a child with all this energy. So you have to make sure you are purposely interacting with them prior to leaving them alone so that they are happy, a bit tired so that they don't have all this energy and that they're comfortable. And the most important thing, well, the mistake a lot of people run into when they have a new puppy is obviously you can't go for that walk because they haven't had their vaccinations. So you have to be exercising them and stimulating them with mental enrichment in another way at home. And you need to use different parts of the house so that your puppy feels like they're not just in the same four walls. They'll get bored, they'll go stir crazy, they'll start doing things you don't want them to do, and then the behavioural issues just pile up one on top of another.
And you use that. You use a really important word, which is enrichment. You know, this idea of like, how do you stimulate them? How do you keep them engaged? So, what are some great enrichment activities that you know you recommend for pups, like to keep them engaged, to stimulate their minds? Like, what are the types of things that you think work really well?
Number one, training is the best kind of mental enrichment. Making them think is the best kind. Obviously, making sure that you're doing the training properly and not doing it for too long. There's a whole lot of, you know, I could talk about that for a lot, but that's the first thing.
That's training. A whole podcast.
It is a whole podcast. So training the puppy, best way to use that mental enrichment. And then you need to think about the breed's original purpose. So I like to say this to people. When you look at a cavoodle, they're made up of a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and a toy poodle. Now, Cavaliers were originally bred as lap dogs, so they don't have much of a specific breed purpose, but poodles were originally bred as hunting dogs. So back in the day, hunters would shoot down birds and they'd go and retrieve these birds and they would go and chase rabbits out of holes. So they were bred and raised to do all this hunting and searching. So cavoodles have those traits in them. So what you want to do with Cavoodles is you want to give them different games where they can use their nose and they can chase and retrieve things. So if you can get different puzzles where the dog has to move pieces around to get the treats, or you throw a bunch of treats in the back garden and they have to go and sniff around to find all of them, those sort of things where you're addressing their original breed purpose has the biggest effect on the dog, and that's what they'll enjoy the most. So if you don't have a Cavoodle, you need to look at your breed and see, you know, do some research. What were they originally used for? And then make games and make situations where they can, you know, use those original traits and I'm not sure the word here. What their purpose is. If you have a working dog, they need to do some
breed characteristics.
Exactly, breed characteristics. That's what it comes down to. You can also get a whole bunch of really great enrichment toys where you stuff long-lasting treats in them and they have to chew. Puppies love to chew. They're teething. So you always want to leave them with something to chew. Otherwise, they're going to chew your furniture. So no matter the time of the day, when I have puppies 24/7, they have something to chew, something yummy. A rubber toy is not yummy. Your puppy's not going to chew a rubber toy. It needs to have a treat, or it needs to sit in some boiling water and put in some chicken stock to make it yummy.
Oh, that's a good tip, actually. I've never done that, but chicken.
Yeah, otherwise the rubber toys, they stink to us. They'll smell even worse to the dogs who have a great sense of smell. So you got to get rid of that smell and you have to make it yummier. So pop it in some chicken stock or beef stock.
What? One of the toys in there?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, pop in a, you know, a bully stick, shove it through the middle and then give it to the dog and they think it's the best thing and it'll help, you know, soothe those gums that are so sore.
Yeah, this is George. This is like Ottolenghi meets cooking. Breeding. It's amazing.
I've got a question. It's one of my Dion questions, Tiana. My son always wants me to ask ridiculous. Is the Cavoodle the most accessorized dog breed?
Yes. The thing with Cavoodles is when you are wanting to get a Cavoodle, it's not just the dog, it's kind of the image that comes with the dog. If you think of Cavoodles, you see them at cafes, at getting coffee, you see them out That's walking true. A lot. You see them, you know, they go everywhere with their owners. So they're definitely an accessory. And when you have a Cavoodle, obviously they are a higher end dog. They're designer breeds. They are typically a lot more expensive than other breeds. So people who are spending this money on a Cavoodle, they then want to give the dog really nice colors.
The right harness, the colors.
Exactly. Yes, and it all suits an image. And
the bow tie.
Exactly. But the great thing about the image is they are that companion who can go to the coffee shop and sit beside you. And they are that dog that you can walk around, you know, into different shops with. And they're just beautiful. So they fit the image and people just like to add nice things to them. I have way too many accessories for my dogs. It's embarrassing. I carry around cologne in my bag for them. Not for me, for the dogs. I do. Cologne to make sure they smell nice when they see someone.
Yeah.
And they probably, I mean, I would imagine Cavoodles are probably the most popular dog breed with an Instagram account as well.
Oh, definitely. For sure. The amount of Cavoodle, I mean, everyone who buys a Cavoodle, you know, most of them start an Instagram account for their dog because they're so cute. And then they give the dog little personalities and they write the, you know, the captions from the dog's perspective and everyone just loves it. It's amazing how much they've become like human babies rather than just dogs.
It's interesting because the Labradoodle was sort of where it all started from, yet the Cavoodle's become popular. Would you say in the last 4 years it has become, where's its popularity come from? Wasn't that popular 5 years ago, was it?
No. Honestly, Labradoodles are beautiful dogs, but you're crossing a Labrador and a Poodle. They're two high-energy dogs. So I think as more education came about and people got to hear more about Cavoodles and how they do have that Cavalier in them, it just makes them a bit more easier to manage when you have a busy lifestyle as a family. So I think they've grown in popularity just by education. And obviously they're adorable. So the more Cavoodles you see in public, the more people ask, what sort of dog is this? Then they fall in love with the temperament and then they go get a Cavoodle. So it's a bit of a cycle. And definitely also COVID increased the number of puppies, Cavoodle puppies. And breeders, backyard breeders as well, as I'm sure you've come across since you know go through all the trustworthy and reputable breeders. There's a lot of backyard breeders as well. So it's a bit of it's a complicated industry, to say the least.
It is, yes, and because they're such a popular breed, it does sort of bring out...
attracts all types.
Types.
It does.
And another question I do get, Tiana, from them is that they... I get quite a number of Cavoodle people that ask me about the colour. And that deep apricot versus the light apricot, how do they? And I realise that when it comes to colour, the most popular would be the apricot. Am I right? With a bit of white.
I find personally, based on like the questions I get, the most popular is the ruby colours, so the darker red. But what a lot of people don't realise is that poodles in general, they lighten in colour unless they have a special gene. Lets them keep that colour. So most people start off with this ruby Cavoodle and it grows up into an apricot Cavoodle because they don't realise that the dog lightens unless they...
I think it's the kit fading gene which you can't really test for. There is an intensity gene that you can now test for which measures the amount. But when a dog starts as one colour and fades, that's an untestable gene at the moment. So it happens over time. But usually the deep ruby or red or apricot is what they all look for. I do. Some of them are starting to look for some with a bit of pied or a bit of white on the chest, which gives it a nice sort of look. And what about grooming wise? Do they need much clipping?
They are a high maintenance breed. A lot of people are under the mistaken impression that they're low maintenance. Cavoodles are high maintenance. They need to be groomed every 6 to 8 weeks, full groomed body grooms at the groomers, which costs upwards of $80. So it's a big expense. But in between their grooming appointments, you have to be brushing them properly every single day. If you don't, they get knots, they get matted, and then the dog gets shaved, and then everyone cries because their beautiful, fluffy, teddy bear-looking Cavoodle is shaved and now represents something more like a rat. Because once they're shaved, all the cuteness disappears. So they are a high-maintenance breed in terms of grooming, and you need to dedicate that time every day. And a lot of people don't know the proper way to brush the dog. They don't know the proper tools to use to brush their dog. And so they might be trying to brush every day, but they still end up in the same spot where the dog needs to be shaved because the dog is matted.
Nathan, we're not selling the breed that well, are we?
No, but it's good for people to be aware of everything, I think. You know, and Tiana said it's a you know, lifetime commitment. You've got to go in with your eyes wide open.
And look, grooming is the hardest part of, okay, separation anxiety aside, grooming is the most demanding part of a Cavoodle. They don't need the same level of exercise and enrichment that these working breeds need. So they are fantastic. But if the owner isn't prepared to upkeep the grooming, well, the dog either stays shaved permanently, which no one likes, or you just run into a whole lot of health issues with the dog.
You just do what Genetic George has done, Tiana, and learn how to groom yourself. And I'm grooming Mary myself. It's been an 8-month project, and she's come from really bad to now looking.
Okay.
You know, I used to have people ask me, is that a griffin? I used to groom her so badly, people couldn't recognize the breed.
Yeah. Now,
I've worked out some things. I've worked out the levels on my wail shearers and what to use. I'm getting better around the feet and wetted toes. The eyes are still a struggle. I need to get the curved scissors.
Yes.
Yeah,
clippers, the scissors. And I've got my little grooming table because, like, most, you know, people of Greek heritage, spending $90 on a haircut, I could do it myself. And I did. I've learned it, Nathan.
Exactly. And I do my own grooming as well because I have so many dogs. I can't afford taking 4 dogs to groom up. That's a lot of money. So I do it myself. But it's everyone can learn it. And
it's good. I'm getting better. The eyes are sort of, and, you know, Griffin is one of the hardest dogs to groom, Tiana. Not talking poodles. They were talking about that look around the face. Sometimes I might cut a bit more, getting much better. So I hear you. If you can, I'm enjoying it. I don't know.
It's a great bonding experience too, doing that grooming. And it can also mean that you make sure that you're doing it correctly. A lot of people just throw their dogs into the grooming salon and then they develop all of these fears to grooming and being like the clippers and the bath and the hair dryer. So at least at home you can manage that and manage your dog's, you know, energy and stress levels.
Correct. Mary loves the hair dryer. It's the only bit that she does like.
Yeah. Oh, she likes the hair dryer.
Loves it.
She just sits there and fans herself.
As I've told Nathan, I can get the leaf blower out and she'll sit on the leaf blower. Yeah.
Wow. You don't hear that often. Usually it's that the dogs hate the
Mary, you know, Charlie hates, but anything blowing in Mary, but Mary doesn't like the grooming part. The table comes, she likes to sit flat. And look, let's not underestimate the value a good groomer has. No. I'm not saying here not to go to a groomer, visit one. I used to take Mary to quite a few, but I then with COVID and lockdowns, I found it hard to book, and sometimes bookings were 3-month waiting lists. So
yes,
hence why I did them. You know, if you can, I always recommend a good groomer, Nathan. We've had some good groomers.
We have some great groomers on the podcast.
Who have taught me a bit as well. That's where I, you know, they encourage.
Inspired you to try your hand at it.
I love feathering. There's an art in feathering with scissors. You know, I used to cut my kids' hair, Nathan.
Well, you have a background in grooming then.
The photos have all disappeared, but they used to laugh at
notes. It's good. I mean, I've also got a question that I get asked a lot, Tiana, as well, grooming aside, about, you know, most people get a puppy when they have a lot of time on their hands. Either we're coming up to Christmas. There will be a lot of people that do tend to get puppies at Christmas because they've got more time on their hands as well. You know, even during COVID, people were at home. So they were like, you know, that's the right time to get a dog. People take time off when they are getting a dog. But how do you balance being around all the time, you know, and wanting to help acclimatize the puppy, wanting to help, you know, make them settle in well with teaching them to be alone? You know, you sort of touched on it before as well, but it's like this sort of hard balance between, you know, you might be at home a lot, but you want the pup to be comfortable being alone. So what do you do?
Well, it comes back to, I always say, is that routine. So, I mean, one of the things I do with my clients is I set them out like morning, do this, puppy spends his time alone, give the puppy this, do training here. It's about just thinking to yourself, you know, a puppy, depending on the age of the puppy. So this is important, right? The development of the puppy's brain is important to keep in mind. Young puppies, when you pick them up at around that 8-week mark, they only need a few minutes of training multiple times a day. If you do an hour-long training session, it's more detrimental to them. So it's all about understanding the puppy, the way the puppy's brain works, and dedicating time every day. So I say mealtime, we feed, we use feeding to train them. We enrich them that way. Then the puppy spends a few hours alone. Then the kids might come home from school, we'll have a play. Then the puppy is going to go do another enriching activity by itself. And then it's dinner time and we'll spend more time. We'll play a game of fetch outside. It's making sure that you just don't have the puppy on you all day long. If you have the puppy on you all day long, weekend comes around, you leave the house, they have separation anxiety.
Mm. All right. Well, talking about games, Nathan, I think I might play the game here now. And
oh, yes.
Show the DNA.
The final one of the year.
Yeah. So what we do, Tiana, is to make sure that people are listening and, you know, we're keeping people engaged and everyone really waits for the Orivet DNA voucher that we offer, the full breed profile to the value of $195. Yes. We ask a question and they have to answer. So the question I'm going to ask is, what is the name of Tiana's podcast? Very easy. If you're listening at the start of the podcast, right, you should be able to answer, but you need to email George. Nathan, you're good at this. I have you as my manager. What date are we going to want this email?
So not the 25th. You don't need to email George on Christmas. He's got better things to do. But maybe the 23rd of December, before we're breaking up for Christmas break.
So the 23rd of December between 11 a.m. and 10 a.m., you need to email me with the answer to that question to win the full breed profile voucher. That's the competition time. So we got that. It's the 23rd of December between 11 and 11 and 10 a.m.
Daylight savings time.
Yeah, with the answer to Tiana's podcast that she hosts and runs.
Nice.
Easy, done.
We got to have our competition. Otherwise, the listeners get up in arms, and I get emails if we don't do it. So we do need to make sure we do it. I guess we're talking a lot about puppies, right? We're talking a lot about like the ideal scenario, the perfect scenario where you can start from the beginning and it's great. But sometimes you might maybe not have started in the right way, or you might have got a dog who has separation anxiety. You might welcome them into their home a little bit later in life. So Tiana, do you have any tips or advice for people who might have an older dog who's a little bit anxious? Is there anything you can do it's obviously gonna be a lot harder, but is there anything you can do to try and sort of, you know, work on making them more comfortable being alone? I mean, I have a 2.5 year old dog who is very anxious, and you know, we've had to work hard on, you know, trying to just, you know, bring that alone time that little bit further up each time. But, you know, what do you recommend?
Well, with older dogs, I mean, yes, they do need counter conditioning training, which is a lot harder. It takes a lot more time and you don't end up getting the same results you would as a puppy. But with counter conditioning training, it's a similar process, right? You always need to start very small and build upwards when, as long as the dog is not showing any signs of anxiety or fear. And a lot of the time, these dogs with separation anxiety, I mean, you mentioned it before, George, the dog knows when you bring out the suitcase. They know what that means. So some people in the mornings, they can simply have an alarm on and the dog knows that when they hear that alarm, it's a work day. The owner's about to leave. And so the dog starts getting anxious before the owner's even left the house. So it's about finding what triggers your dog has. So is it, you know, the alarm going off? Is it you having a shower and putting your shoes on? Is it you jingling the keys? Whatever that is, you need to first work at desensitizing them to that before you can start practicing leaving them alone without them having anxiety. Because if you leave the house and your dog is already anxious and is already showing signs of separation anxiety, it is very difficult for them to bring down those levels back to normal. So you need to make sure you find when does it first start, and usually it's before you've even left the house, and desensitize them to that first, and then work at making them more confident and capable on their own. And it's a similar process. You need to make sure that the dog has been exercised, they've had mental enrichment, they have something to do when you leave the house. A lot of people fall into the trap that once the puppy is no longer a puppy, they stop giving the dog things to do. That can't be the case. You need to continue mental enrichment for the dog's whole entire life. So yeah, starting small, find the triggers, desensitize to the triggers, then work at leaving them alone.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's they just pick up things like mine know that it's sort of, they sort of chill around and sleep. But when my shoes come on, they know it's time to
that's when the anxiety starts. And that's when you need to intercept and try and desensitize to the shoes being put on. Otherwise, by the time you leave, your dog is already in a state where they just simply can't calm themselves down. And then they're just so incredibly anxious. So you have to get it right at the start.
I might have a routine. I'm in my slippers and I know he's not going to. As soon as the multicoloured vans come on, mate, serious shoes, yep. Right, they know this is walkies. They're here. They're waiting and the collar goes
on. Isn't amazing? They can tell the difference. They know what shoes mean. I'm going for a walk or George is leaving.
If I've got my R.M. Williams boots on, then I'm going clubbing or something that somewhere else is doing, you know, he's not going to take me there, or they pick up all these things. They're just so switched on. And even Mary knows, let him get up. He's still got to have his breakfast. She's still in bed, doesn't even bother. But when it's shoe time, then one knows to come on. The collar comes on first, one of them, then the other one comes and they do a bit of a spin and get excited because they realise it's time to go. And then I disappoint them when I just don't take them. And they sit there going, what the hell? You're not taking me. What's going on? Sorry, I got a meeting. No, they usually always come. But sometimes I do have meetings and they won't come. But it's that routine again.
Yeah.
Trigger points that they work on.
It's a good, and I like that term, sort of counter conditioning as well. Like you've got to unlearn those behaviors and untrain them. And I mean, with
very hard to do.
Oh, it's so hard. I mean, with our little dog Abby, you know, she's a very anxious dog, and we've started basically just trying to get her being comfortable alone for 30 seconds, you know, 60 seconds, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. We set up a little camera near our door as well. So, you know, we'll do a planned separation where we'll go out of the house for a minute and we'll be watching, and then we'll come back in before she gets anxious. And I think we're trying to, like, to your point, Tiana, like, if they're already anxious, then it's not going to come down. You've got to build up that time where they're not anxious and that threshold. And if you start to see the signs of them being anxious, then we come back inside. And then you just want to try and build that up as well. That's at least what we're trying to do.
No, it's really all you can do, because it's just, we can't tell them that we're coming back. So they're going to be anxious. They also just, they rely on us as a source of comfort and security. So they just need to start learning that they're okay by themselves. But you can't just flip a switch and leave them outside for 3 hours and expect them to feel okay. You have to just start small, and you have to positively, you know, reward this behavior. So you need to make sure that they are being rewarded for being comfortable and feeling okay. Because the biggest reward for Cavoodle than these small breed dogs is literally you. Being with you is the biggest reward. And you're taking that away from them. So you need to make sure you're replacing it with a really high value reward, with such as like a really yummy treat that they never get any other time. Like, make something really yummy for them that they only get when you leave, and then they start to get excited for that time alone by themselves.
Mm. I've got into giving mine like chicken necks after a long walk, so they get excited. Are they going to get their chicken necks? And mine love a car, so the keys they drive. If they said they're coming in a car, it is just excitement time.
Yeah.
And then another thing, Dion told me, goes, why don't, when you get the suitcase out, why don't you put them in the suitcase and zip it up, and then they'll hate the suitcase. And I go, no, no, that's not the right way to do it.
Not the right way.
Don't make them fear the suitcase.
Exactly. We want positive reinforcement training. We don't want to use fear as a way to train dogs. We need to respect them and they need to respect us, and it can't happen if you're using fear.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, Tiana, are there any other tips that you want to share for, you know, Cavoodle owners out there, or any other, you know, important considerations around separation anxiety, or just any other tips that you picked up from your podcast as well?
One of the biggest things I like to tell people when they're getting a new puppy is to remember that the puppy is always going to be a reflection of the environment they're raised in. So you have to look at your own household. If your household is a very stressed, anxious household, your puppy will absorb all these emotions because they are body language readers. They don't speak to us with English. They don't speak with words. They just read body language. So if your household is already stressed and anxious and on edge, you can't expect your puppy not to feel that way. So you need to look at your environment, look at the environment the puppy is in, make it as calm as possible. Make it as loving, calm, warm, inviting as possible, and your puppy will start to reflect this behavior. A puppy doesn't want to misbehave. A puppy doesn't want to chew your furniture. It doesn't want to cry. It wants to listen to you, but you need to be very clear with your communication. And if you're saying, be calm, but then your kids are running around yelling and chasing each other, that's conflicting emotion for the puppies. They can't understand what you want. So you need to make sure the entire household is reflecting the energy you want your puppy to have. And that's one of the most important things. So when you're getting a puppy, examine your household first and think, where can I make this a better environment for the puppy?
And Tiana, as someone who likes to take drugs, I'm sorry, likes to administer drugs where I can, is there any particular drugs that... that you may be able to give to a dog to help it with it? Because some dogs are just so anxious, they have to look at medication.
Before using medication, obviously medication, you have to go to the vet and get a prescription. But medication aside, there is a product called Zilkeen. It is a natural product. It's not medication, and it's made out of the same sort of proteins that's in the mother's milk. So when a puppy is young and they're drinking their mother's milk, we say they're puppy drunk, they're milk drunk. They drink milk and they pass out completely. So this product called Zilkeen, it's made of those same products that's in the mother's milk. So it helps to relax the puppies and bring down those anxiety levels.
So where can I get this from?
Pet shops, vets, they have them all there. It's like if you know that your puppy is going to go through something that might be a bit stressful, say you're moving house, say the puppy's coming home for the first time, or let's say you're getting there's fireworks coming up and a big storm, you can give them this product just to help naturally lower their stress and energy levels, and that way you can manage the situation a bit more easily. That's what I find's best before trying any medication.
And then there is obviously higher levels of medication through a veterinarian. If you've got a dog that is super anxious, or like you said, some dogs, if you know fireworks sends them crazy, then you can look at it. If you're moving home and you have to leave your dog somewhere at someone else's place, there could be, because you know sometimes it's the only way to use it, especially if it's within the breed, it's an older dog, you can't rewire it. And let's not forget, sometimes dogs are created anxious because of the environment that you've had them beforehand. You might receive a puppy or a rescue dog, because it simply is anxious because of what it's gone through.
Exactly, and that's why, like, when you're looking at getting a dog, and this is why Right Paw is so fantastic, because I've looked on them, most of the breeders on there, they follow a curriculum program for the puppies. The time that the puppies learn the most is from when they're 3 weeks of age.
Correct.
And most of that time is when they're with the breeders. So if the breeder isn't doing the right thing with the puppies, you can't expect the puppy to come home with a clean slate. They have been impacted by the breeders. The breeder every single day. So you have to make sure you're looking for a breeder who is already starting separation anxiety prevention training from when the puppy is practically walking, which is, a few weeks old. So you have to do your research. The big investment getting a puppy, you want to make sure you have a puppy who's got the best chance of fitting into your life and not causing you ongoing issues and costs, because counter conditioning training is expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it all just, yeah, it comes down to having the best possible start that you can have. Tiana, thank you so much for sharing all of this knowledge. I can see why you host a very, very detailed and fantastic podcast. And it was great that you could come on and share that with us.
Yeah, I loved it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And before we go, I think, George, should we ask Tiana our final segment of the year? Doctor, give me the
news. I gotta... Four books that we can choose. Well, we have, of course, the breed dispositions to diseases in dogs and cats, and Tiana will pick a number.
I can see a cavalier on the front there.
Because it's got a lot of diseases. That's why it's... And then I've got, of course, we can't leave the year without Johnny Bryson's Dog Judge's Guide.
Where a great book, a staple for any dog enthusiast.
And I thought I'd change it this week because Nathan, I know, loves this guy here, and we've got Ottolenghi's. I've got his other book too here, Nathan, Plenty More, where we can choose a recipe out of that. And I thought with the Greek theme, yes. I know there's a bit of controversy around this, but look at Georgie Porgy's cookbook.
Oh, my goodness.
George Calambar. George Calambar.
Oh, he's a bit of a persona non grata nowadays.
Right, that's right. You know, the kids age 8 to 80, you know, we can choose a number. So based on the number, I might do two books and three. And I thought I'd want to show you. You want to see accessories. Look at this beautiful accessory I've got
here. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. George is holding up a what is that? Is that like a jewel-encrusted bow tie.
Now look at the way this woman does her bow tie. She's smart. She puts the little thing here. She puts it through your collar. How smart is that?
That is beautiful. I've never seen a bow tie that, you know.
This is charming.
Amazing. I like that one. It's a handsome bow tie. That's very handsome.
The reason you haven't seen one of these before in this sort of, look how smart that is. I picked these up when I was in the US. There was a woman doing bow ties, and I love it because it goes onto your collar.
Yeah. Well, I see a lot of the bow ties here, they only have the one loop, and so it doesn't sit right. But those double loops, that'll make it sit perfectly. Like,
look at that. And this is just Charlie's, and that's Mary's, of course.
There you go.
We're talking
accessory. That's it. If you're looking for a Christmas present for your dog, there you go.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right, so... Let's go, Tiana. Let's pick a number between 1 to whatever, and I'll see what I can pull out here. You've got up to, 400 if you want to. No, not 400, 300. So let's pick a number.
Let's do 117.
117. What should we look at first? So we'll go to Georgie Porgy's, eh? Controversial. It won't be as...
This is George's Christmas recipe.
117. Let's have a look. Oh, God, how boring. That's okay. We have to read it out. It's hot chips with tarama salata.
Oh, yum.
Yum. And he's used a particular type of potato, Nathan. It's the russet Burbank potato for his and he's grabbed a cup of tarama salata. And for those people that don't know what a tarama salata is.
For the uninitiated.
If you go to page 28 of his cookbook, it's basically a wow, look at this. I didn't know it was this. Isn't it like a garlic? What is a tarama salata? Help me out here.
I thought it was like a fish roe.
Fish egg dip? The pink
it's
dip.
It's a white cod roe dip.
Yeah. Right.
With some lemon juice.
Yum.
And the chips are just done, but cuts them to thick chips. You know, salted cold water, which is we're having chips tonight, and I think we've done some salted over high heat for a while. You let them drain, you place them on a paper towel, and then you deep fry them that was quite boring, and then stick them on a paper towel, but it's dipping it in the tarama salata. That's Georgie Porgy's, that's simple for kids 8 to 80. But let's now go to Nathan's favourite book, one of his favourite chefs, which is... Ottolenghi, what number did you say again? Sorry, Tiana, was just
117.
We're getting the full Christmas menu.
Yeah, we'll be all prepared.
Ooh, Nathan, stuffed courgettes.
Zucchini.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, courgette is the fancy European word for zucchini.
He loves it. See, I see he's unbelievable. He's actually using some Greek yogurt here. This recipe is too long. It starts to fill it with, you need some of the some sunflower oil, some onion, some short grain. This is too complex.
That's the thing. I love Ottolenghi, but he's, you know, you need, you know, a whole evening to really bring that to life.
Yeah, this is like actually doing a, you know, offering a genetic test. It's so complex. You've got to extract the data, you've got to get the primers, you've got to amplify it, you've got to PCR it, you've got to analyze.
There's a lot of steps.
It's a lot of steps. So let's go to John Bryson's book of top breeds, because if there's one thing you can rely on, it's Johnny Bryson's book. Really, a really nice Christmas hamper present.
Yeah. For dog lovers everywhere.
Lovers, because, you know, I know, Tiana, it doesn't have the cavoodle in there because this is about breeds, concise breeds. So let's go to 117. And
what group are we in, George?
It's the, well, this is another thing. Remember we told John to fix this in his book? It's the blue book, which means it's 117. It's the hound group.
Okay.
And it's the dachshund.
Ah, yes.
Probably the second most popular breed on Rightpaw after the cavoodle.
And, it's the only breed I know that John dedicates, let's have a look how many pages to it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages to it because there's so many varieties.
Yeah. Size and
coat.
Yeah. And Tiana, you've selected probably the least popular variety, the dachshund, the mini wire-haired dachshund. And as you know, they've got a long head. Their neck is long. They've got a mouth scissor bite. Their rump, they're broad, they're strong. Their breastbone's very prominent. They're long and low with no exaggeration. Remember, we're not encouraging exaggeration anymore in breeding. They're compact. They're a well-muscled body with enough ground clearance to allow free movement. Another important thing, enough ground clearance to allow free. Height at the withers should be half the length of the body, measured from breastbone to the rear of the thigh. And temperament-wise, Tiana, they're bold, they're defiant carriage of the head and an intelligent expression. Wow, John.
That sounds familiar. There.
Yeah, look, the thing when you read this book, every breed sounds beautiful. It's the way John's, the adjectives he's used to describe them and adverbs he's used. Yeah. He's just amazing. I don't know where he gets all this knowledge from, John. Another shout out to John. If he's listening, he owes us big time, Nathan.
Yeah, we plug this book every week. It's great.
And great value. It's 39 AUD, edition 3. I'm holding. And anyone really who wants themselves a really nice gift, get that. It literally is bedtime reading. Not.
If you want to go to sleep, maybe. No, I'm joking. No, it's great.
Should we do a disease? May as well.
All right, let's do it. Let's take us home.
Take us home with 117, which is, you've chosen the Irish Wolfhound.
Okay, I do love an Irish Wolfhound.
So they have a number of conditions from, okay, you know, cardiovascular to dermatological, yes, to endocrine to gastrointestinal. Let's have a look how many pages they all go through. Let's have a look at what they've got in the way of. They've got a von Willebrand's disease. They also have a neurological condition that you need to be aware of. Anything that we offer for them, I don't think there is, apart from degenerative myelopathy, but generally, as I said, this book goes through every condition that's been published. And there's a prevalence of dilated cardiomyopathy in the breed. 5.6% is found in the breed. So we need to be, yes. And some hyperthyroidism. So we're finishing on the Irish Wolfhound. We've gone through the chips with the Dharma Salata. We've had the,
the stuffed zucchinis.
The stuffed zucchini and the dachshund is our Christmas.
What a journey we've been on.
The stuffed dachshund, the hot Irish wolfhound with a Dharma Masalata. But no, it's been a good way to finish. And I know everyone sort of now because it's a good time to talk about anxiety and everything, because it's Christmas time. I know we don't encourage people to get pets during Christmas, but it is a popular time.
It is.
For people to be looking for a potential pet into the new year.
Yeah, and I think that's why we wanted to have that topic, because, you know, a lot of people are going to, you know, be confronted with this very important time the next 6 weeks, where you're going to have all that time off. You know, take Tiana's advice. Make sure that you are stimulating your dog, that you are getting into a good routine, that you're keeping them enriched. I think this has been fantastic learning, and I do hope that we have some fantastic, well-socialized, non-anxious puppies as a result after the Christmas period.
I hope so too. That would be amazing.
Brilliant. And give us, for one more time, Tiana, tell us where people can find you and your podcast, and give us a final shout out.
Well, you can search my name, but it's a little bit difficult. So instead, if you just search Cavoodle Coach on Instagram, I'll come up there. Same with on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Cavoodle Coach, I come up everywhere. I also wanted to mention, this just might be helpful for anyone who is getting a puppy. I'm not sure if you can link it, or maybe just go onto my page. I have a socialization guide for new puppies, and it also steps you through a little bit about separation anxiety and just what you need to socialize the puppy to. So anyone getting a puppy, it's always good to make sure you have a plan for how you're going to socialize them when you bring them home. So that's free to download from anyone. If anyone is interested, you can go on my website, Tiana Karamayas, or my Instagram pages, and it's all there.
I've just started following your podcast.
Thank you.
Just went on and had a look.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I'm going to check your social media page as well and start following. You know, if there's one thing that's come out of it, I'm going to listen to it. And you've already had, I saw 32 on there, 32 episodes. Is that right?
Yeah, I try and do 2 a week, but they're only 10 minutes long. But I find that a lot of people just want the quick answer to their simple questions. So I try and get a couple out every week. And so far, I've been quite consistent, except for now, but I have a litter of puppies at the moment. So I've been a bit MIA while I've been looking after them.
I think people can cut you a bit of slack on
that. I hope so.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you tend to stick yourself in a lot of your photos. Most people tend to avoid that, Tiana.
Yeah,
so well done.
Well, I find that a lot of people who are looking at getting a dog, they want to know who's behind the camera and who's actually raising the dog. So I try and get in front of it as much as possible, and then they I can start being more approachable. So if they have questions, they feel like they can talk to me more easily than if I was, you know, not online at all.
So you do 2 episodes every week?
Tuesdays. Tuesdays and Thursdays.
That's great.
And people want to know the person, the breeder behind the, you know, behind the breed as well. So I think it's great. Yeah, brilliant. Well, Tiana, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great episode. I've really enjoyed it and I've learned a lot.
Oh, that's great. I've loved being here. Thank you so much for reaching out and for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. And to all of our listeners, we will be back in 2023. So enjoy your Christmas breaks from everyone here at What the Bark. Have a happy Christmas break and a Merry New Year. And we'll catch you all in 2023.
Bye, everyone. Have a really nice season break, everyone. We'll see you in 2023 with some exciting new episodes, Nathan.
Absolutely. All right. See you then.